Hello, hello, and welcome to the Grandcast. I'm your host, Chris N. Today is Friday, February 17th, 2017. This is episode number 6 with Ryan Lathrop, the Grand Rapids comedy legend. For anybody that hasn't heard the Grandcast before, I'll go over the revised mission statement and goals, because it changes seemingly every week. Mission statement is: the purpose of the Grandcast is to explore the comedy scene in Grand Rapids, Michigan, as it exists in 2017 through a series of conversations. I got rid of specifically improv because I don't want to put that restriction on there anymore.
This might get some sketchy people.
Maybe. Sketchies, stand-uppies. What other kinds of comedy are there? Prop comics? Is that its own genre?
Amusing spoken word.
Mimes? Are mimes comics?
Yeah, they're performers, but I don't know if they're necessarily comics.
What about clowns?
I think clowns are their own thing. When I was in Chicago, though, not to jump ahead on things you'll probably ask.
I'm just going to cross that question off right now.
People talked about their clowning classes. And clowning classes seem super intense.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I remember someone was like, one day he just made us stand in front of the class for as long as possible without us doing anything. And so that awkwardness would just fester up. Because if you're, especially if you're a trained performer, your goal is to break the tension. And he just make you sit in it.
Stew.
Yeah, and it's like, what? Why is that from a clowning class? It's, jeez.
I guess clowns are, they have to be used to people not laughing. And the goals for the Grandcast. Number one is to post one new episode weekly. I removed in audio format because who knows?
Yeah.
Maybe I'll switch to all video or something. Just, again, removing restrictions. That
yeah, or if you do a Vine episode, well, I guess it's not a thing anymore. Snapchat episode. It's saving a lot of work.
Instagram, don't they have a
thing? Oh, yeah, yeah. I think they got a thing now.
I don't know. I'm not hip to the socials. The second goal is to make at least one person's day better through the creation of quality content. Do you have any goals to add or suggest?
Hopefully not to keep the 3 or 4 people that we know are this inane.
Hi, Josh. Bored. Hi, Tom.
Josh, Tom. I don't know if I'll listen to this one, though, because then it'll just be me listening to myself.
That's a good exercise.
Yeah, it'd be tricky.
I listen to them, and
yeah, that makes sense.
I have to listen to myself.
See the tone of my voice and see what it sounds like, what I think it sounds like.
Yeah. Detect the inflections. Definitely. It's good to listen to yourself. Maybe you'll do some character voices and you'll see what those sound like. That was one of Cam's suggestions, is to record yourself doing characters so that you can hear how you sound and make improvements.
Cam loves doing characters.
He does. And I love Cam doing characters.
He did Bernie at Fictional Friends.
Oh boy.
It was good times. He's very committed.
I was so tired. Sorry, Cam. All right, so let's get into these fresh interview questions.
All right. That's James Lipton, the ship.
The iced tea guy?
No, nope. The guy who Will Ferrell impersonated.
George W. Bush?
Different guy that Will Ferrell impersonated.
I'm not familiar with that. Is that inside the actor's studio?
Yeah.
That was it. I saw the Dave Chappelle one. That was really good.
That's a good one.
Yeah. All right. How did you first get started in comedy?
I was an only child, and I was always like kind of a ham. Like, I remember in fourth grade being really happy when one of my notes from the teacher was like really funny in class, and I was like, "Oh, awesome!" And even as a kid, I was always watching like Looney Tunes instead of Sesame Street. Like, instead of like learning productive things. So I've always just been kind of drawn to it. And I did a play in fifth grade, and I overacted even more than Nicolas Cage, because I was supposed to be like an old owner mad at everyone else in the play. And no one told me how to act, so I just screamed my lines. Yeah. And it was fine, but looking back at it afterwards, it was a train wreck pretty much. But so I always just was drawn to performing. And then, I mean, we always had cable or satellite in my house, so like got to watch Comedy Central, episodes of SNL, the Canadian one. All of a sudden I'm blanking on the name of it.
Something, was that a Citizen one?
No, you're thinking of Upright Citizens Brigade.
Second City?
No, that's SCTV.
SCTV.
Dudes who dress like girls. You're thinking of the older one. I'm thinking of Kids in the Hall. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yes.
Like Kids in the Hall and a bunch of the stand-up. And so, like, basically comedy had always been around. And then did some theater in high school.
You were a thespian?
Yes, I did a little bit of church acting in middle school and high school. It was like an Easter play. Surprise, Jesus was in it.
Like the Stations of the Cross? And...
Oh, no. It wasn't like a... It was more of like a modern kind of thing. I don't remember.
Like cosplay?
I don't think it was Jesus cosplay.
Hmm.
But it was like a... It was, you know, all church plays are about message than they are... Or more about message than they are about subtlety. So... Message was pretty hammered clear, whatever. And, yeah, like, I remember watching our Who's Line and watching that stuff. And so we'd play improv games in theater class. Or not theater class, we didn't have theater class, but in theater auditions and, like, just as a game. And that was were fun. And watched Who's Line. And in senior year, we did a talent show. And it was me, my friend Kevin, and Zach, and we all performed live. And I just knew I wanted to perform and do stuff. So, like, when I looked into colleges, like, I looked for a theater program, and I went in as a theater major. And I knew about after hours before I even went to the college. Like, I looked up to see what the school had and was like, yeah, I want to do something.
After hours is the comedy troupe?
Yeah, the workshop improv group. Or improv troupe.
That was at Central?
And high school speech class was huge.
Oh, like debate? Or?
No, we just had a like regular speech class. Like, it wasn't forensics or anything like that. It was, and
for speech impediments?
No. Like,
oh.
This like speech class. Like
giving speeches?
High school, public speaking? Yeah, public speaking class.
Okay.
And I had, I did a lot of off-the-cuff, loose speeches. Because it was like teaching you how to speak from, what's the phrase? You speak off extemporaneously? Nope, that's not how you say it. Oh, well.
I don't know.
But speaking off your head and...
Like flow of consciousness?
And so that, I got a lot of laughs during. And I was like, oh, this is cool. And so that was another like little moment for me.
Nice. Tell me about, if you're allowed to speak about this, the anonymous letters to the DeVos family at your work.
I mean, there's really nothing there, basically.
Well, we could speculate recklessly.
It's basically someone wrote a letter to the family and didn't send it to them, send it to the hotel. and then someone was dumb and opened it instead of, like, referring it to security. Like, there's no, like, chemicals or anything. It was just like, Betsy's not a good person to have do this.
Oh, was it
kind of thing?
Like constructive criticism or affirmations? Well,
they didn't let us see the notes.
Hmm. It's weird the way that people act out sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
I should have had more follow up for that, but.
I mean, it's a pretty boring story, to be honest.
Yeah. If we're not rampantly speculating on. All the Grand Rapids extremists, all the extreme letter writers out there.
Yeah, let me get some Indeed resumes in before I wildly speculate.
They might have even used swear words.
Oh, no.
This is a two-part question.
Okay.
The first part is, how was the date night bit created? And the second part is, was bit the right word for that question?
Okay, the first part of that question is, I was going to do a two-man show with my roommate at the time, Ben Curley, who was another after-hours guy.
Curley?
Yep, Ben Curley. And
like the fries?
Yeah. And he was stuck working... his pharmacy job or whatever, couldn't come. And so I was like, hey, Mike, I have the slot saved. Do you want to do something? He's like, yeah. And then we started asking around who could do it. And we only got one dude. And he bailed on us the day of. And it's like, oh, that's a bummer. And so we sent Facebook messages back and forth while he was at work. And I'm just killing time at a coffee shop. And I think I came up with the relationship thing because it was the secret of the thing is it's not anything clever, really. It's just day in the life. But instead of interviewing one person, you're interviewing a couple. And day in the life is a game we played in After Hours for years. Mike loved to interview people for that game. I used to interview people for that game sometimes. I'd be annoying and ask people this question all the time. What would you like on your pizza, or what would you like on your tombstone? And don't say pepperoni because of the tombstone pizza commercials.
Bacon.
Yeah. Terrible joke, and occasionally it got laughs. But like Mike loved it because he was a journalist and it was doing improv, so it was like right up his alley. So I think that really worked with our strengths. And then the first couple we did it, they were traveling overseas, and so that was interesting. And the guy who's all the other groups dropped out, so it's just us and no outlet. And the person who was hosting it decided not to time us. I don't know why. We haven't done the show before. We don't know how long we're going, so we went 45 minutes our first date night.
And that would be interesting.
And it wasn't that awful. Like, the crowd liked it. We got a lot of laughs and stuff. And after he went off, he's like, yeah, it was good, but you went too long. Yeah, no one told us.
I would like to see a 45-minute date night.
Yeah, I think it would work as long as the couple was good.
Yeah.
Because you could get into more of their interactions, because like a lot of romantic comedies stop at the date or stop at that kiss or stop at that wedding, and they don't cover the funk and the trials and tribulations of a relationship is.
The like, erectile dysfunction.
That also. So like, that's one of the things that was nice about The Office is like Jim and Pam, you got to see them actually be a couple. I mean, I'd ignore this last season when they have that cameraman guy get involved and stuff. But, like, I think people just like seeing relationships when they're done well.
Yeah.
Also, I wouldn't call it a bit.
Okay.
I would call it a format.
Format. All right. Like, write that down.
Kind of like a Herald's a format.
All right. Next question. The television show The Big Bang Theory. Why the hate?
Here's the thing. There's so many good shows that are actually about nerdy stuff.
Like what?
You have Silicon Valley.
It's true.
You have Archer that is filled with references.
Those shows aren't broadly accessible, though. Like, they have a pretty niche audience, I feel.
Yeah. But there's a lot. Flash, basically everything the CW's been making. All the Netflix shows, like the Marvel series. But then you have The Big Bang Theory, which is essentially Two and a Half Men, created by the same dude.
Great show. Chuck Lorre, a genius, who also did Roseanne, Will and Grace, some of America's most beloved sitcoms.
Which is, it's basically Two and a Half Men with a nerd candy coating. So it seems more, it doesn't seem authentic to me, I think. Hmm. And I think that the thing that really drove that home is those YouTube clips where it's episodes of The Big Bang Theory
without
laugh track, and it's just dead. And you're like, wait, why'd they pause?
They selectively,
that's not a joke,
took out sections.
I mean, there might be some funny things, but I think the joke writing isn't as sharp as for how popular the show is. I think it's a badly written show that's popular.
It's written for an international audience. So they can't have as many specific references, like cultural references.
Yeah.
As something like Silicon Valley, which is targeted towards people that follow like startup culture.
Yeah, I think and it's not even the actors are bad or anything. I just
like Sheldon is great.
Yeah, I just don't like the writing. Like, one of my favorite movies used to be Garden State. And him as the knight in Garden State is hilarious. But yeah, I just, the writing of that show just does not do it for me.
But can you appreciate that other people enjoy it?
Nope. Because, I don't know, it's one of those things where I fortunately haven't had this too often. It's only happened like once or twice. But I know a lot of people where this has happened a lot. Where, oh, you're a nerd, so you like Big Bang Theory, right?
Yep.
And it's like, nope, I like good shows.
Wow. I guess we'll have to agree to disagree on that one.
CBS just makes me sad.
That's the Illuminati eyeball. How can you? All right. How are you liking that beer?
It's good. It's got like a, it's not to be like all highfalutin or whatever, but it's got a real nice toffee note.
Yeah.
And it's really quite good.
This is a 2016 Kentucky Breakfast Stout from Founders Brewing in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I've had this one bottle conditioning since last year, and Ryan had never tried KBS before, yeah, so
it's a good start.
Taking his KBS cherry,
and that's in this city, that's a mighty cherry to take.
Yeah, I'm putting that in my cherry jar.
Your cherry jar, because normally for beers, I'm a sour guy.
Sours are delicious.
Yeah, and some people are like, oh, they can't even believe that they exist sometimes when you explain it to them.
Yeah.
But I love that pucker. Like, it almost brings you back to a kid. When you get like that intense, you're just like
Sour Patch Kids or Warheads. Yeah.
Like, the first one I had was just in a flight. And so it was a small sample. And I was like, oh, look. What? This is a thing? Maybe I do like beer. It just kind of like blew my mind.
Yeah. We should go to Logan's Alley on Monday after Calm because they have the new Speciation Brewery, one of their beers on tap. They're exclusively doing wild sour beers.
Cool.
And he used to do the sours for Harmony, and now he's starting his own thing. And they release bottles once a month, and now Logan's Alley is going to have it on tap.
Awesome. Like,
permanently.
Harmony sours were really good, too.
Recently. They used to be hit or miss.
Okay.
But, yeah, he's very good at what he does, so I'm excited to try that. Tell me about your relationship with Mike Nichols.
It's definitely one of those love and hate relationships sometimes. Because I think we each do things that drive each other mad. Sometimes it's intentional, but other times it's just how we're wired. We're going to annoy each other at sometimes. And I think a lot of times that's a bummer, but I think our chemistry and things is really good.
Yeah, on stage, yeah. It's great.
Like, I didn't know, because every year in After Hours, he was never the guy that I had the most chemistry with. Like, one year was, like, our redheaded friend Lee from Texas. Another year it was Eric Dresden.
What color was his hair?
Black. He was a reporter, or he ended up working in journalism and doing a lot of cool stuff. And it just kind of bounced. Like, I've had good scenes with Mike, but he's never been, like, the number one guy that I always work with. We do a lot of switch left together, though.
What is that?
Switch left is a game where you have four people. And people call it all sorts of different
things.
Was
that Foursquare?
Foursquare.
Okay, I know.
Yeah.
Name.
It's such a solid game. And
it is.
And I think why it's so solid is because it sounds complicated. Mm-hmm. But really, it's just, hey, let's see four two-person scenes.
Yeah. And you have to pay attention. Like, it keeps people kind of focused. Otherwise, they'll forget what the topic was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's fun working with Mike. And now we've known each other for so long that we can read each other. And just in life, I'm like, oh yeah, I know what he's going to think about this, or he knows what I'm going to think about that. And we're really headstrong, which I think we're both headstrong people, which means naturally that we bump from time to time.
Sure.
But yeah.
Keeps it spicy. Does Mike ever let you be the top?
I don't know if it was, no, it wasn't Mike. A similar conversation like this happened at, with After Hours, except there was this, different improviser with Evan. It was me and Evan were talking, and some other people were there, and Evan's like, yeah, I totally would be the top with you, Ryan. And I just laughed at him, and he's like, what? I totally would. I'm like, you couldn't handle this. And just joking around, because I don't care. It's such a silly thing. But he got annoyed because everyone we went to constantly said he would be the bottom. Consistently, every single person. And he was like, what the hell? I'm just like, I'm a man. Deal with it. But let's see. I think, who would be the top out of me and Mike? I would say probably just because I don't have as much energy as he does. That just makes sense for him to be the top.
He could be a power bottom. I don't.
Yeah, I don't. Gets hairy too. That'd be a bummer.
Next question. Let's talk. That's not even a question. A lot of these are not questions.
They're just like jumping off points.
Let's talk about Ned Talks.
Okay. Cool.
Let's talk about Ned Talks.
Question. That was basically a spinoff of a show that I did during the early Comedy Mondays, before No Outlet, before all that stuff.
Still a dog story?
Still a dog story, and it's called One Track Mind. And it had a month of shows. And one of the reasons why Comedy Monday kind of died out a little bit is attendance was going down. So one day I had to cancel the show because no one came. Not even the people that were regularly attending, because they had Pop Scholars early on. Joe was doing stuff. They had Cashbox. They had a lot of really good improvisers. And the bummer thing is a lot of them just have moved on with adult life. So there's a lot of really talented people even years ago that were doing stuff there. And so me and Mike ended up through going there and doing jams, doing a long form run of a show called Taxi, which is a kind of like a constructed long form. And that was fun. And then it's like, hey, Joe, I got some ideas. And he let me do the One Track Mind, which was cool because I wasn't even that experienced. Like, you probably shouldn't have. I mean, they worked. They were really fun shows. But I was had never booked anything before. And they were.
You saw your potential.
I guess, yeah. And I was able to get like people like Stu
McAllister.
Stu McAllister.
I've heard that name. I don't think I've met him.
He is like the lovable grump of Grand Rapids.
He hosts Dr. Grins?
Yeah.
Is that? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Well, he used to.
Used to.
But like, he's a talented guy, and like, he has like a grumpy persona, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get to know him, or if you've just heard about him enough, he's one of the nicest guys in the city. Like, I really like Stu. But yeah, so I had really good comics on the lineup, and the thing was every month or every week had a different topic, and then I'd do a stand-up show, and then I'd interview them about the thing.
One person per week?
Yep. No. There'd be like three comics.
Oh, okay.
So then it'd be stand-up interview, stand-up interview, stand-up interview. Probably not the best format. And then eventually I got the idea of doing... I did a whole show about religion in Mount Pleasant called Religarious. And that was the same kind of format, except with sketches and religious sketches. And that was a lot of fun. And then somehow I got the Ned Talk idea. And just like, hey, why don't we just have funny people do this?
Excellent. This one isn't a question either. It just says board games. Board games?
The weird thing is, I've always been into them, and that makes no sense because I was an only child. Like, my dad really liked Monopoly.
Classic.
And I really enjoyed playing it with him, or with our family and stuff. But, like, sometimes we play board games with neighbor kids, and I always, like, buy my parents' flea marketed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So we, like, literally, sometimes my dad would just not work in the summer, and we'd sell stuff at the flea market. And so I had a bunch of those kind of board games, and they always clicked, and then just playing more. Like, I didn't play Catan until college. I played it on St. Patrick's Day.
That's your first time?
Yeah, and it was two girls, and we were drinking pink panty droppers.
Did it work?
Yeah, like, we didn't get hammered. Like,
oh.
Yeah, it was just casual drinking.
But the panties dropped?
No.
Oh.
Catan, I don't think, is a game that sets the mood.
It depends on the girl or guy.
I guess. I've just never been around the person who was that inspired by a Catan.
But you might have been, but they didn't let on because they were ashamed. There's a lot of that in the board game community from what I've seen.
Shame boners?
And shame lady boners.
Lady boners?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I kind of grasped it. Like, I won the first game we played. And they're like, oh, yeah, so there's rock. I'm like, or? Before they even, I didn't even have to read the thing. Yeah. Like, how do you know that? Well, I've played games before.
it's either rock or sheep or wheat.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I always liked those kind of things. Like, also youth group culture. Because I was in youth group from 7th grade to 12th grade.
Mm-hmm.
You can't finger blast anyone, so you're playing board games.
Mm-hmm. Unless you're the priest.
Oh, wait,
were you Catholic?
Nope, I was
okay.
Methodist.
No, I don't think they're into that, are they?
No, and they're definitely not into this.
Drinking?
Mm-hmm.
Alcohol? Yeah, that's the devil juice right there.
What I like about board games is you get to be competitive in a very low-stakes situation.
Some people take it way too seriously.
Oh, yeah. But I think people forget sometimes that it's just good to say, ha, you suck. Like
Tom Mayer never forgets that. It's like his favorite part. We have beef.
Old wounds. Old wounds.
And they're still fresh. Because he keeps rubbing salt in them. That's all right. I'll get him back. What do you like about Kickstarter?
I like that at first, for a lot of things, or most of history, it's been who you know is how you get things done. And Kickstarter is about ideas. So it's, I want to do this. I want to see this. And so people are coming up with all sorts of creative things. And it also has the hook of a lot of things. If you support it, you get exclusives,
mm-hmm.
which is like a nerdy membership badge. Like, hey, I hope this thing before anyone was. It's basically the way of being a hipster, but you're actually helping people. Because you're like, oh yeah, I was on the train for that. Or I got this bonus feature, or I got this early. And I think that part of Kickstarter, it's not talked about as much. It's usually about the revenue and the startup and the cleverness of it.
Yeah.
And not the feeling of fake superiority that it gives you.
That is an interesting element to the game. A psychological element to keep people involved.
Yeah, because if you don't have good awards mm-hmm. or pledged things,
stretch goals.
You're not going to get, or yeah, in good stretch goals, you're not going to get donations.
Yeah.
Like, look at the comedy project. If they hadn't thought of, like, oh, you get to name a cocktail
mm-hmm.
or choose a theme for a bathroom, which seems, some of that stuff might seem, like, insignificant, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's unique. Like, who in the city can say, I've done this?
Yeah.
I've done that. And you can go anytime someone's in town. Oh, we're going to the comedy project. Here's the funny girl's milkshake or whatever. Like, it's cool.
You get one of them was choosing the theme for a bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
So I could have had like every urinal be my face.
So you would have picked the self-indulgent theme of yourself.
I'm just hypothesizing. Yeah. Talk to me about doing stand-up. That was another statement that I
was an English major, so we could also talk about upward inflections. But,
is that what I did?
Yep.
Did it work?
It did. Because upward inflections generally imply questions.
Hmm.
I loved stand-up. The speech class is the first like taste of it, and then I had to do a set at a church on New Year's Eve. I think that was my first set. Yeah, and I'd been working on stuff, and I'd been doing improv, and the first like real bit of it was at an improv audition. He was like, "Tell me a joke." And so I told some stories, and he's like, hey, you're pretty good at that. It was Dan Nicholas.
What color was his hair?
His was black.
Hmm.
And I hadn't done much. I just done some speech. I'm like, oh, cool. And my friends Jaywalk were performing at a church thing, and I had a bunch of ideas. And so I'm like, hey, do you mind if I do some stand-up during your show? And I do stand up in the middle, right?
Mm-hmm.
After one band's played. And then was supposed to introduce the bands. No one timed me. no one gave me a clue. And so it's a bunch of college friends and a bunch of high schoolers who are youth group kids, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm doing my jokes about freshman year college experience, and they're not – the high school kids are getting none of it.
Mm.
And I speak for 35 minutes. No one –
that's your tight 35?
Yeah, my tight 35. I didn't have – I barely had – I probably didn't have five then, much less 35. And my friends were like, yeah, well, the high school kids didn't get it, but you had some funny stuff there. And I'm like, I still feel like garbage. And but I still wanted to do it. And then we did it after a bunch of people were interested in it. And so we did it after improv shows. And there's some open mics in Mount Pleasant, started doing it more and more. And then I did it in Sunday Night Funnies in Grand Rapids at the hotel. And that probably the first time I did Sunday Night Funnies was the first time I'm like, oh, I'm good at this, which is a terrible attitude. You shouldn't feel like you're good at it the first time. You should be a train wreck. But I felt comfortable on stage, and people like my jokes. And later they do all virgins first, or first-time performers. And no one got laughs. And then I went on stage. I did pretty good. And I fell in love with that feeling of just being alone on stage with a mic.
Hmm. How many grams of sugar do you think you consume per day on average?
Is this because I always buy Snickers.com?
And fruity drinks.
Let's see. I generally try not to. Then sometimes I get in a bad like rut. I don't know. I like soda. Like let it the tingle or whatever. Probably too many. If you saw that John Oliver thing when he talked about cranberry juice.
Oh,
and showed how much sugar was in cranberry juice. And I'm like, but it's tart and it's supposed to be a diuretic.
Yeah, that's something I never really thought about for like a very long time. And then I found out like the average or the recommended daily consumption of refined sugars for an adult is 25 grams, which is like 8 ounces of soda.
Wow.
Yeah. And people are giving their kids like a whole can of soda.
The crazy thing is the recommended for salt is 2,300.
Yeah. Which is like one Chipotle.
You look at a restaurant menu.
Oh, yeah.
It's terrifying.
It's very easy to overconsume that stuff if you're not thinking about it. What was Central Michigan University like?
It was good. I wish I would have been more had more direction when I went there. Like self-direction, not like, because like I had a lot of great professors. Like that theater department, looking back at it, was a knockout lineup of really talented people. And like one of the theater teachers who did interpretive literature theater and readers theater, and taught improv, like she learned under Del Close.
Isn't that like the creator of improv?
Kind of, basically. The history's long and ridiculous. But
like my dick. Oh.
Oh, you have a ridiculous dick.
Not really.
I liked it because going in, I'm a liberal guy who's still kind of Christian-y.
A cuck?
No, I'm not a cuck.
You said liberal.
That's not what that means.
Based on my observation of the media.
Based on some Breitbart.
that is the official news source for the president. So I feel like it must be authoritative.
I remember, this is like 2006.
Oh, that was the pre-cuckening?
Yeah, pre-cuckening. And so up there, and so college, like anyone, was just such a friggin' learning experience.
Yeah.
Because I was one of those kids who could get by in tech, get by, not do much homework, and ace my tests in high school. Like, I tested really well. It was easy. And then you try to do that shit in college, and you're like, oh, no. This stuff's actually difficult. Why'd they do this to me? And so then you're, like, working from, like, a deficit. As soon as you get there, you're like, oh, no, I actually have to, like, put my nose down. And then I switched majors, and then I thought I was going to leave for Chicago my junior year. And then I had probably bed-rested pneumonia for a month of college. I was basically a complete zombie for the month of, like, October and a little bit of November.
And it's so good for Halloween.
Yeah, so my grades just went that month.
You made a downward hand movement there.
Yeah. I like to do a lot of visual jokes on podcast.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. It's
you know, sorry, Josh. Sorry, Tom.
Sometimes the show's for you. Sometimes it's for them.
Mostly it's for me.
So, yeah, I loved it. Like, improv friends from after hours have been basically my friends for the rest of my life. Some people go away or some people move or whatever. But, I mean, like, Mike, up until, like, 2 or 3 months ago, we were still doing shows together. So, like,
we got to get him back on the wagon.
CMU cemented a lot of things.
Off the wagon?
I don't think you're supposed to get people off the wagon.
On the wagon?
Then. Yeah.
Okay. Or is it the horse?
Because I think you get them off the wagon, you're getting them drunk.
Oh, yeah, that too. And then there's something with the horse.
Don't put the horse before the cart.
Don't?
Or don't put something like that. Don't put the cart before the horse, yeah. There you go.
So we need him on, off the wagon, on the horse, in front of the cart. Wait, what is your favorite style of beer?
Sours.
We hit
that. And the more pucker, the better.
Have you ever had one that's too puckery?
No, not yet.
Mm-mm. Do you like vinegar, like on salads and
sandwiches? I do, like vinegary coleslaw. Mm. I don't need mayo on my coleslaw.
No, it's so gross.
And CMU was like the place where I like basically was born as a performer. Because I was doing theater stuff, and then I wasn't doing a lot, but I was theater major, doing all the acting classes and stuff, and then I realized, oh, I don't love theater. I mean, it's great. I'll go to a show and whatnot. But what I love is performing. I like doing comedy, not doing theater. So, like, that was a huge lesson.
What are your favorite comedy movies?
It's tricky because there's...
I haven't heard of that one. Who's in it?
Hey-o. Because there's, like, the Coen Brothers stuff, which are movies that are funny, but they're not, like, traditional comedies, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Like, Fargo's got some really funny stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Or Oh, Brother, Where Art Thou. But those aren't my favorite comedies. There's
Raising Arizona.
Great movies. I really like Raising Arizona, too.
One of the better Nick Cage movies.
My favorite, traditional comedies, I would say, are like Blazing Saddles, Anchorman. I love Blazing Saddles.
You like the other Mel Brooks films?
Not as much as that one. Young Frankenstein.
Yeah.
Still pretty great. After those two,
Spaceballs?
I kind of don't need the rest.
Spaceballs?
I like some of the jokes in there, but...
Are you a Star Wars fan?
I'm starting to appreciate it more with the newer stuff. I don't like Lucas.
That's my problem. George Lucas?
Yeah.
As a director? As a human?
Well, I mean, he's done good stuff as a human.
Has he?
Yeah.
I don't know.
People were complaining about this apartment complex was in his neighborhood. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, we don't want poor people here. And so he just bought the property and let people rent there. And so he was like, F you. They shouldn't get kicked out of their house. Story was something like that. But, and then my favorite movie that's funny is Adaptation.
Ooh, Charlie Kaufman.
Yeah, I love the writing of Charlie Kaufman. It's,
yeah.
Everyone who's by now who's listened to me do a show in Grand Rapids, or not everyone, but a lot of people have heard that I like meta humor.
Mm-hmm.
I even referenced that myself.
Yep.
Which is in itself meta. And Charlie Kaufman is like the king of that kind of stuff. Like Adaptation rolls into itself in such a beautiful way that you can watch that movie 4 or 5 times.
Oh yeah.
And still discover new things.
I watched Synecdoche, New York for the first time last summer or spring.
Did it break your brain?
Yeah, I need to watch that again because
Roger Ebert even said this is a movie you can't watch just once.
Yeah. Like I got like in the middle part I got kind of lost and I was starting to lose interest and it was like, why is this movie like so well reviewed? But I kept watching and then it came back around so strongly. It was like, holy shit.
Oh yeah. And then
everything made sense.
And the part about his illness is just like,
spoilers.
Well, yeah. But it kept it very generic.
Super AIDS. I wasn't sure how to phrase this question.
Okay, go ahead.
Top 5 comedians, ? And or who are your comedic influences? I don't know if those should have been 2 separate ones or just one of the 2.
They're different answers, but they'll kind of all dovetail. Right now, the people that I really like, I mean, because you could always do the standards like Chris Rock and like Louis, everyone. I mean,
Louis Anderson? Guys,
no, Louis C.K.
Oh.
Yeah. There's some guys who are just staples, like Jerry Seinfeld. Like, they're just. Like, I love Seinfeld as a kid.
The show?
Yeah.
The comedian?
I think the comedian's really sharp. But the people I'm digging now, other than like the blatant crazy ones, are like, I love anything Garfunkel Notes does pretty much.
Yeah.
Paul F. Tompkins.
So good.
Ron Funches. Hannibal Buress has got a lot of really great stuff. I love his New Orleans story. Pete Holmes is always great. Ron Funches is. He's so good. Funches? Yeah.
R-O-N-F-U-N-C-H-E-S?
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to check him out. I haven't heard him before.
I like it because he's joyful and like basically a teddy bear who's hilarious. Tig. I just recently watched Showtime show of Tig Notaro, and it was her doing shows at people's houses.
Hmm.
And it was her and I think John Doerr. It was so funny. Watching those, and they would just break each other's balls of different bits, and it was so friggin'. Tig is amazing. That's another one that pretty much doesn't need to go, can go unsaid. Like, she's just great.
She did an Amazon show.
And I don't want to see that take my life. We know, or is that the Carmen Espinosa show?
I don't know. I don't. I watched like 1 episode, and it wasn't for me.
Yeah, I think I mixed them up. That makes me a terrible person.
Nope. What are your favorite podcasts?
I like the Bill Simmons podcast on The Ringer. This American Life, but I have to be in the right mood for it. That's how I discovered TIG, like I think a lot of people did. Like the Taylor Dane story. So good. I forgot Mike Birbiglia. I love Mike Birbiglia too.
We went to see...
Don't Think Twice.
I was thinking twice. That was my mistake. you hear they're closing down the Alamo Draft House?
I know, that's a shame. That's a crime.
Yeah.
Wait, what are we doing now?
Favorite podcasts.
Favorite podcasts. Oh, okay. I listen to some wrestling podcasts.
Professional wrestling?
Yes.
Like the WWE?
Yeah. They're not produced by them. But there's this guy, David Shoemaker, I really like.
Is it the wrestlers themselves, or this is
no?
Like,
this is like.
Do they lack the coherency to?
This host is
it?
Just other. No, some of the wrestlers have some good podcasts. Chris Jericho's a pretty natural interview. I'm trying to think. I don't know. I got so burned off of the. I probably shouldn't say this, but the one-on-one interview kind of thing. And like, I've listened to so much Marin. I just kind of know what the interview is going to be before I listen to it for the most part. Sometimes
has this been extremely predictable so far?
Well, I imagine if people expected me to be long-winded and incoherent, then they're probably right.
From my has my side been up to your expectations?
Pretty much.
I haven't thrown you any curveballs?
No curveballs yet.
Sorry about that. Next time... You'll
curve it?
Yeah. I'll serve the curve. This podcast is sponsored by Kogel's.
It's not like... Wait, what's the Clint Eastwood movie? Hanging with a Curve? Of Amy Adams?
And... I don't know. Another non-question. Well, there's a statement and then a question.
Okay.
Tell me about living in Chicago.
Okay.
And do you have any tips for Cam?
I love Chicago. The happiest time of my life was there. And then some of the worst times of my life.
It was the worst of times.
But the food in that city is amazing. Learning at an institution like IO is amazing. And at the time, it was almost just like just a basement with a stage out above it and some classrooms, like, but it was like hallowed ground. I remember I did a sketch class there and they performed it, and I'm like, something I created, it's being performed on a stage that's been shared by like ridiculous amount of people I respected. And like, now, I mean, it's a small little tie, but you have like a little connection with those people, and it's cool. And so like that, and the food in the city's just amazing.
What was your favorite food in Chicago?
I really love Demo's Pizza.
Is that
some of those
deep
funky
dish
pizza
or...
places? Nope, just giant by the slice kind of place. They had like mac and cheese pizza, ooh, crab rangoon pizza.
Crab rangoon.
Yeah, they would do specials, and
was it like actual like rangoons, or did they deconstruct it into like wonton strips and cream cheese and crab chunk?
Yeah, it was really good. And then
that sound really good.
They would like do like Thanksgiving dinner on a slice, breakfast burritos
on it as a pizza.
Yeah, they do schnitzel pizza. Like, they did funky
deep fried
stuff.
Pork slices,
and like the gravy and stuff is really good. They would do, and I was like in wrestling at the time, and so they had two pizzas named after CM Punk that they would do every once in a while, and it was like awesome. I'm in Chicago. CM Punk's from Chicago, and I'm eating his pizza. Yeah.
And any tips for Cam as he moves to the Windy City?
I think the easiest thing is, or not, the most important thing, is making yourself get out when you don't feel like getting out of the house. Because sometimes you're working, you're tired, you don't want to go see a show, or you don't want to go and do an open mic where there might be only comics in the audience. Those things suck sometimes, and sometimes you just gotta put your nose to the grindstone and know that this is for a bigger purpose.
That is a good tip. Let's talk about wrestling. Let's talk about wrestling?
No problem. Wrestling is the only memory I have, other than going to McDonald's, of my dad's dad. I remember was it WrestleMania 4 or 5, whatever one has Hulk Hogan wrestling Ultimate Warrior. And I had my dad or my grandpa bought me, I can't remember who, bought me a blue wrestling ring with like the stretchy ropes.
Like for action figures?
Mm-hmm. And I'd play with the wrestlers and stuff in like the bathtub and in my room and everything. And it's like one of the only memories I had. And I was like, oh, okay. And then watched it until 7th grade. Kind of watched a little bit of it in 8th grade. But then my main friends, Kevin, Aaron, and Craig, thought wrestling was stupid. And these are like the guys I'm hanging around all the time. And so there's kind of no reason to watch anymore. I'd play like the video games sometimes, but that's about it. Fast forward to college. I'm home one day during summer vacation. I turn it on. And there's these big guys like Batista, like giant muscly guys. I'm like, eh. And then there's this punk guy called CM Punk. Tattooed from Chicago. He's straight edge. It's like, all right, cool. Like, he's a different dude. I like punk music, but my punk music was really pop punk music. I wasn't that cool.
Straight edge means like no alcohol, no drugs.
I wasn't straight edge then, but I mean, I didn't drink alcohol when I first started, but I wasn't against it or anything.
Just heroin.
I just obeyed the law, basically, kind of thing. But he was really cool. And then there's this other guy, Kofi Kingston, whose wrestling does not have the greatest history of race relations.
Oh.
And so he was a self-African wrestler playing a Jamaican. But he was so athletic, and just the guy had a leap that seemed superhuman. And he was jumping around and doing these flips and kicks and stuff. I'm like, oh, that guy's really cool. And so then some other guys did cool stuff. And Rey Mysterio was still around, and I liked him when I was a kid. And so I started following it. And then I realized there's an online community.
Mm-hmm.
And there's backstage politics.
Oh.
So basically, every story that happens in wrestling happens on three levels. There's the literal story that they're telling. There's the relationship, or there's the backstage politics of it. Then there's the relationship with how the crowd is reacting to it compared to what the audience or the office wants them to react to it. Because wrestling's like no other storytelling. When you make Breaking Bad, you make a bad guy, he might get cheered, but that bad guy's still going to do bad stuff. But there's no instant reaction. Vince Gilligan doesn't know what your opinion is right away. And it's already pre-written. He can't change it. Wrestling, if they introduce a guy who's supposed to be this awesome badass, the audience is just like, boo, he sucks. He needs to go.
Oh.
Then the company's like, what do we do? And that doesn't happen anywhere else in storytelling.
Hmm.
Like, it's a weird, unique thing. And a lot of wrestling has, like, carny talk. And so they're performers just like anyone else. And I think that's really interesting. Like, a lot of it's just improv. They don't have, like, every spot in the match pre-booked.
Hmm. You got to get working on that beer. We're almost done with the interview segment.
Uh-oh.
And then there's going to be vodka ginger beer cocktails.
Mm.
Since I know you enjoy a nice Moscow Mule.
I just love ginger.
I don't have copper mugs, but it's the Trader Joe's Triple Ginger Brew, seasonally available in the fall.
I feel like Trader Joe's was made for lonely people who like good food.
Thanks.
Aw. The first time I went there, I'm like, thinking it was a regular grocery store, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, so much of this is prepackaged meals.
Yeah.
I just wanted stuff to cook, and I'm like, oh.
Oh. Oh. What are your strongest criticisms of televised professional wrestling?
Well, my strongest criticisms would be, as I mentioned before, it's one of those things that can be racist and sexist and homophobic. Sometimes it does things that are against the norms and is actually ahead of things, like, and that's good, but sometimes it's like, it lives up to the hillbilly reputation that it has, and then you're kind of bummed. But like, when Donald Trump got in the Hall of Fame, because they have a celebrity wing, mm-hmm. He's done stuff in their history. This was like 2 or 3 years ago. He got booed out of the place.
Good.
And it wasn't a, we're in on this boo from the fans. It was, we don't like you.
Mm.
Boo. But there's, I think, and they're getting better at that. They're actually giving women time on their program, and they're having main event spots. They're doing incredible things. There's not, because they used to have, like, awful, like, bra and panty matches and jello matches, and, like, basically there was a while where professional wrestling was just stuck in adolescence.
Yeah.
And it's still a little bit of that, but it's gotten light years better. Because that stuff was garbage, but like Sasha Banks and Bayley could go up against any match. They're just amazing talent performers.
Do you feel like overall it's a positive influence on its younger viewers?
I think so. Because I think it does the simple things. Like, it's one of those things where the magic is still alive. And then when the magic gets... Because everyone eventually finds out wrestling's fake.
What?
Yep. Spoiler alert. It's scripted. I mean, I guess, yeah, it's not fake. It's scripted. Because fake implies that there's no harm. And there's certainly harm. People... Because wrestlers have been hooked on pain pills for decades. Super sad. But wait, what's the question again? Sorry.
If it has a positive influence on its younger viewers, yeah, overall.
I think it's good because it's a classic wrestling story is generally good overcoming evil. And the simplest, basest form of a good wrestling story, it's this guy wronged that other guy, this woman wronged that other woman. And they've had to suffer, and they've been beaten on, they've been taken, they've been ripped off, they've been jumped backstage or whatever. And then that good guy gets their comeuppance, or gives the bad guy their comeuppance, and it's people just lose
vengeance,
their minds.
Mm-hmm. But through violent means?
Well, I mean, probably you, if you're a parent, like any source, like superhero movies I think are good for kids too.
Mm-hmm.
But you need a be with them and be like, this is not how you solve this, but this is a cool, creative, imaginative world and that kind of thing.
Hmm. Drink that beer.
Yes, sir.
Do you like the UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championship? Real wrestling, one might say.
I really like Ronda Rousey. I thought she was really interesting. I don't watch it. Like, I don't, like, look for the pay-per-views or anything.
But have you in the past?
But if it's on, I'll take a glance at it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not anything I'm against. It can be a lot boring because, like, Ron Funches, the comedian I was talking about earlier, has a joke about, you know, pro wrestling's fake, right? He's like, oh, no, you've shattered my reality or whatever. And then later after in the joke, he's like, what kind of monster would I be if I wanted it to be real?
Mm.
Like, if I wanted these people to be hurt.
Yeah.
And UFC is wanting those people to be hurt.
Yeah.
I'm glad that it's more cleaned up than it, because people used to call it human cockfighting.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, and it's
a blood sport.
Yeah, it's tough. But statistically, they have less concussions than football. And I
is
mean,
it just because their careers are shorter?
Football's not going to change anything. I know their UFC careers are longer. The average
than football?
Oh yeah, the average NFL career is 3 years.
Whoa, I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's a rough, brutal game, and people get thrown out.
Yeah,
I think UFC's interesting. I wish Dana White wouldn't have been so high on Trump,
because
Now if I hear UFC, I'm just like,
I didn't know that.
I don't want to be reminded of that garbage.
Hmm. Yeah, I've watched far more UFC than any WWE stuff. Not in a long time, but for a while, like a group of my friends, mm-hmm. they were into, like, they trained as in boxing.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd watch, like, every UFC event. And it was really, like, modern day gladiators. Like, they're out there, they leave it all in the ring. Like, they're fighting as hard as they can to win using any tool available to them. Yeah.
Except for punches to the back of the head or crotch shots.
Yeah.
I think are the only
and
rules.
I think eye gouges is eye the gouges, other one. Yeah. Very, very primal, like the struggle and the violence. I'd say probably, yes, they're bad role models. Like, it's not something that children should watch, and it probably instigates poor behavior in adults, but goddamn, well, if it isn't entertaining.
I think it's more guys who wear, like, those friggin'
Affliction
shirts and stuff. And it's like,
Ed Hardy.
Why does liking men rolling around punching each other make you have terrible taste in clothes?
That's a question for the ages. Final question of the interview portion before we take a short break and then come back for the mini segments.
Okay.
And this is something I came up with as we were talking.
Okay.
This is improvised almost. If you could tell your 16-year-old self one thing, what would it be?
Do more. Like, I was such a slacker and still am. Trying to fight it. I've held my job for almost a year after being heart failed for 2 years. But yeah, like, because I could have done more theater. I could have tried to do summer programs. I looked for summer camp. Actually, funny story about this. The same teacher that, one of the teachers that said I was funny, I've had it multiple times. So what can I say? Miss Nelson. Ayo.
What color was her hair?
Old people-ish? No, black, I think. And she, without me knowing, signed me up for a summer camp or for a scholarship. And so I'm like, awesome. And it was only available for two camps. One camp was further away, and the other one's just like 15 minutes away. In the year that I had called, they're like, oh, yeah, I'm sorry, we're in all girls camp now. I'm like, oh,
awesome.
So I'm guessing the scholarship doesn't work. They're like, yeah. I'm like, okay, then.
Oh.
And so, yeah, I remember watching, like, those Salute Your Shorts.
Oh, yeah.
And all those things. And I've always dreamed of being at a summer camp.
Mm-hmm.
And it never happened.
Oh.
But, yeah, just basically do more. Like, do your homework, you asshole. Like, scholarships would have helped me so much in college. And I didn't get hardly any of them because I was a slacker.
All right. Well, that concludes the interview portion of the show. I haven't had time yet to set up a musical transition into the break. So if you wouldn't mind doing some sort of musical, anything, whatever you're feeling, to take us into the break and then ring the bell when you feel like you've climaxed.
Well, I'm going to need you to play something different on that laptop if I'm going to do that. But you know what they would call this gimmick? Or you know what they would call... I already spoiled it. You know what they would call this bit in wrestling? It'd be called a gimmick.
Yes.
I like wrestling phrases. All right. So, something musical. But I can't use the table.
There's another table to your left.
Oh, that's true.
Just don't knock your water over.
Should I get some percussion? Let me see. Can I do the glass thing? Oh, it's not waxed enough.
He's stroking his glass right now.
I wanted to be like Sandra Bullock in Miss Congeniality. I took a class in romantic comedies in college.
Yeah, that's why you watched it?
No, that was I watched that before. Hey... We're going to try to do a Barry White kind of thing here. Fox a lady. Or fox a man. Or foxy both. I don't know how you identify. You are listening to the Grandcast. Enjoy. I'm really just hoping that this creeps out Josh. Can't say his last name.
You can say Josh's last name.
I can say Josh's last name.
Sorry to interrupt.
It's fine. All right, I'm just going to transition into some beats, some smooth, sexy beats. Pooch, ch, ch, pooch, ch, pooch, ch. Yeah.